24 years ago today, Kathleen and I, with our three kids, drove from Paragould, Arkansas, all the way to Montgomery, Alabama, in order for me to graduate that evening. We pulled into the parking lot, and it was about 4:30, 4:35, and graduation was at 5:30. I needed to get my cap and gown as quickly as I could and get changed and get in line. We pull up in the parking lot, and one of my professors meets me right in the parking lot. He says, "Vic, I need to talk to you." "Ugh. Are you kidding? I'd just taken comprehensives the week before, and I just knew." He's going to say, "Vic, we may let you walk, but you're going to have to take those comprehensives all over again." He pulls me into a room, and he says, "Vic, we just got a call from your mother, and your father has passed away." 24 years ago today, my dad died on a Friday afternoon. Our lesson's entitled, "What My Father, Gerald J. Eskew, Taught Me." That's my dad when he was good looking. That's my dad when he was in his early 20s. Couldn't find a good picture of him as he got older, but that's a good one when he was young. What my dad taught me. I want to begin by giving you just a little bit of background about my dad. He was born to Mose Fate and Virgie May Eskew, and I'm thankful that they don't name me after my grandparents and stuff. My great-grandfather's name was Mose. Notice that. His brother's name was Noah. We think that they really named them Noah and Moses, and somehow in the paperwork, the S got dropped off of Mose. But his name was Mose Fate Eskew. My father had one brother. His name is Harold Eskew, and he's still alive today. And he lives in Millington, Tennessee. He's in his upper 70s right now. My dad grew up on a farm in Friendship, Tennessee. Friendship's located between Memphis and between Jackson, Tennessee, about 60 or 70 miles out of Memphis. It was a small farm. They raised corn, they raised cotton, they raised some cows, some pigs, some chickens, and had a couple of mules to go with it. My dad's parents oftentimes were nothing more than sharecroppers. In other words, they were provided a house on land to live, were given a small stipend in order to help another farmer with their land and with their crops. So they weren't a wealthy family by any means whatsoever. My dad graduated from high school, but he never attended a college or a university. My father spent 2 years in the Navy and got out. His father died right before my mother and father were married. My dad was about 22. His dad was only 58 years old, died of a heart attack. My father was a journeyman electrician, and he also had his heating and cooling license. So he was, as far as having the ability to make a living, very talented in those areas to do that. He was married to my mom for about 49 years and died June 20th, 1997, at the age of 61 years old. A young man, wasn't he? My dad had some foods that he liked, kind of interesting foods. Bologna sandwiches, that was big in his life. Spam, and it could be raw or cooked, didn't matter. Vienna sausage, we took a lot of those on our camping trips. He did at least drain the juice before we ate the Vienna sausage. He loved sardines. He'd open up that can and he'd start crunching them nasty things up. Stunk up the whole house. Put a little mustard in there. put them on crackers, and then he'd look at it and say, "Want some? Are you kidding?" He loved potted meat. Good old potted meat. He liked pig brains too. He'd put those in his scrambled eggs and eat those. And he loved some good old chicken livers. Now you know why he died at 61. No, that's not really the case. That's not why he died. My dad also had some words that he just loved to talk about. One of them was antiques. He never said antiques. He always said antiques. He said, "There's an antique store." You wonder what in the world he's talking about. My dad loved the word echelon. And he talked about all those people who were in the upper echelon. And one day he hoped to be in the echelon. If my dad ever got a hold of a word, he wore it out. You go, "Oh, Dad, leave echelon alone." And then he loved Barbara Walters, not because that was her name, but because he loved to call her Barbara Wawa. So there's some stuff about my dad. My dad was fun, but he taught me a lot. And I want to talk about those in the remaining part of this lesson. Several lessons that my dad taught me. One of them was this, folks: do not compromise the truth. My dad left home. He went into the military for 2 years. He gets out. He meets my mom. And they then get married. And at that particular point in his life, my dad is not a faithful Christian. My mother was a Methodist. They married and they began to attend the Methodist church right around the corner, Aldersgate Methodist Church. I can still remember going a few times to that church. But over the course of time, my dad told my mom, "I cannot tolerate this teaching. I cannot tolerate this doctrine. I cannot tolerate this manner in which they worship." So they compromised some and they went to a Christian church. And they spent 2 or 3 years at the Christian church. And after a couple of years there, my dad went to my mom and he says, "I still know that this is not the way that I'm supposed to be worshiping. This is not the way that God intended. The instrumental music is not supposed to be added to worship." He finally convinced my mother, and at about the age of 7 or 8 years old, me, not them, we began to attend the Knight Arnold Church of Christ in Memphis, Tennessee. And it is in that congregation where I grew up, and it is the home of the Memphis School of Preaching from which I graduated in 1982. Folks, the Bible teaches us plainly that you do not compromise truth. The writer of Proverbs says, "Buy the truth and sell it not, and wisdom, instruction, and understanding." My friends, you and I need to stand firmly upon the truth of God's Word. And we do not compromise it even in our relationships, even within our marital relationships. It makes no difference. Truth is truth. Secondly, my dad taught me contentment. My mom and dad moved from a little place called New Bern, Tennessee, where I was born, to Memphis when I was about 6 months old. They lived in an apartment for a couple of months and they got run out. And the reason that they got ran out is because of a crying baby. I was the only one born then. So I ran them out of their first apartment. They went and they bought a house. It was about 1,200 square feet. 2 bedroom, 1 bath. $8,500. When all the kids were born, we all were put in the same bedroom. Dick on the top bunk, Eric on the bottom bunk, my sister in her own bed off to the side over there. And folks, that's the way we lived for years and years and years. Finally, my sister, she grows up and she's about to enter into her teen years, and mom and dad says, "It's time for that girl to come out of that room." So they add 2 bedrooms to the house. They make it about a 1,500 square foot house. No second bathroom, just one. I don't know why, but we grew up that entire time. Eric and I, we stayed in the same room till I was 20 years old. My sister finally left the house, and we got our own bedroom. When we were in our teens, we constantly went to Dad and said, "Dad, let's move from this house." We watched all of our friends, and guess what they were doing? Their parents were making some money, and they were going into bigger houses, nicer homes, and as we would drive through neighborhoods, we'd see one for sale. "Let's go in and stop, and let's look at that one." And we just pestered my dad constantly. "Let's move. Let's get to a bigger house." And every time, his answer was the same. "No." Several reasons. Number one, this house is paid for. Number two, this house is centrally located to all schools. That's the reason they picked it out. Willow Oaks Elementary, Colonial Junior High, Overton High School, all within walking distance of our house. There was all the conveniences surrounding our house that we needed. You didn't have to go hardly anywhere to get somewhere. And my dad said this, "We don't need a bigger house. This house is sufficient." See, my dad was content with that house. My dad would buy a car and he'd drive a car till the wheels fell off. I didn't learn that lesson. I think I've had about 20 cars since we've been married. But he would, he'd just drive the wheels off a car. Drive it till you couldn't drive it anymore. Why? He was content with what he bought. Folks, does the Bible not teach us contentment? But godliness with what? Contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we will carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. Wouldn't it be wonderful if all of us could just be content with exactly what we have at any given time? My dad was. I'll guarantee you that. A third lesson he taught me was humility. My dad was a talented man in his field, a journeyman electrician, heating and cooling license. And folks, he was good at what he did. But my dad never wanted any spotlight put on him. He never wanted in management positions. He didn't want to excel in high places even within the church, but he would do everything he possibly can for the church. If they had an air unit go out, Dad would go fix it. If they needed something wired, Dad would go wire it. He didn't want it announced in the bulletin. He didn't want it announced from the pulpit. He never wanted his name announced for anything that he ever did. Dad was just a humble guy. He hated the politics that are played in so many places. He couldn't stand this idea of you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. He couldn't stand this idea of individuals out of their pride and arrogance trying to rise to the top and lord it over other individuals. Dad just wasn't that kind of an individual. You see, Dad understood Proverbs 29:23. A man's pride shall what? Bring him low, but honor shall what? Uphold the humble in spirit. Dad was just a humble man upon the earth. Is this, take care. He worked at the airport for a number of years. He would come home at night. He and another man had a small side business that they did working on air conditioning units. Then we had those ones you had to put in the windows. And they did tons of that, delivering them all over the city. He worked right around the corner at a gas station. And he did all of that in order to feed his family. Dad knew how to take care of us. He wanted to make memories with us. He took me and my brother fishing all the time. My dad would make certain that we had big Christmases. Didn't get much else through the course of the year, but you had a big Christmas, and I can remember tons of them. He made certain that we went on vacations every year. Not for a week, 2 weeks back to back. And we had some good vacations. I was in a camper. No air conditioning in that camper. Two built-in beds for me and my brother. Joan, she always got the good beds and stuff. Girl or something. But Dad wanted us to have good vacations. When we went on vacation, guess what Dad said? cost means nothing. Oh, man, that was wonderful. You ordered what you want at the restaurant. You got all the souvenirs you could almost take home with you. It was unbelievable. But those were the only 2 weeks. After that, it all ended. But Dad wanted to take care of his family. And my father made certain that we were in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. You see, Dad understood Ephesians 6:4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's important. Folks, you can teach your children a lot of things about the world, can you not? Important things. But if you don't teach them about being a Christian, if you don't teach them about morality and living the Christian life, what good is their life? It only is good for the here and now, isn't it? But my dad also taught us 1 Timothy 5:8. If any man provide not for his own, especially of those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. You take care of your family. You do not rely on somebody else. You be as independent as you possibly can, and you do everything that's needed to make certain there's food on the table. My dad was a disciplinarian as well. He made certain we behaved, and he taught us, guess when? Not when we got to be teenagers. He taught us we were little bitty fellas. Folks, when we got to be older folks, I can't hardly remember a time that my dad spanked me, because he did all of that when I was little bitty. But I do remember this. At 16 years old, I was in my room and I struck a match and blew it out and the smoke went everywhere. And I had the door closed and my brother was in there. And my brother just thought that was pretty cool. He said, let me do it. And I said, no, we can't do this. I said, we can't do another one. My brother said, if you don't do it, I'm going to go tell Dad. So he struck the match, blew it out, smoke went everywhere. We hid the matches underneath the crayons. My mother walks in. Smells like smoke in here. No, there's no smoke in here. Smells like smoke in here. Finally, we tell her, yep, we lit some matches. And boy, my dad, he blew a gasket. That was my 16th birthday. We were all dressed, just about to go to my grandmother's. And he hit me so hard that I slid from one end of the hall all the way to the other end of the hall. And he said, boy, don't you ever strike another match in this house. Unbelievable. 16. I remember it to this day. I think my brother was back in the room laughing because he didn't get a lick. But my dad taught me, folks, you take care of your family in all areas. Now, this is one that really is interesting to me. My father taught me, you do not quit regardless of how hard life gets. Let me show you a few things. One of the reasons my dad was so strict with matches and fires is because when he was a small child, his family home burned to the ground and they lost everything except the clothes on their back. So he knew how dangerous fire is, and he didn't want to see another home lost. And that's why he was so angry with me for striking that match. He lost his father when he was 22 years old at the age of 58. When my dad was in his 20s, he had an ulcer erupt in his stomach. He had to be rushed to the hospital in order to take care of that. And he was in the hospital for about 10 days due to that eruption of that ulcer. At that time, they didn't allow too many kids in hospitals. That had to be a special permit. So we finally all got to go up there. I walk in and Dad has these tubes running in his nose and into his gut. And I'll never forget how awful he looked having all that stuff attached to him. Because of that ulcer, he lost a heating and cooling business. He and another man were in business with one another. They had almost every business in the downtown area of Memphis, Tennessee. The reason they lost the business is because the other gentleman had had a heart attack. My dad was the only one that was working at the time. The ulcer busts on him. He's put in the hospital. By the time they both recover, go out to recover their business, that business is gone, folks. It was the heat of the summer, and they were looking for other heating and cooling people. Lost a business because of that. My dad took a job, and on that job, he had acid go into his eyes, and he was in the hospital, almost lost his eyesight because of that. At that same job, he burnt his feet severely, second-degree burns, and had to be rushed to the hospital in order to treat those, and was off work for about a month for those burned feet. My dad had four major back surgeries during his lifetime. The last one that he came out of, he had a small limp because of it. My dad was diagnosed in his mid-40s with manic depression. He'd had it since his 20s and had gone with it undiagnosed that entire time. My dad, before he was diagnosed with manic depression, also became an alcoholic. You see, he turned to alcohol when he was beginning to make those downward turns with manic depression. And he thought that it made him feel a little bit better. What he didn't realize, he was really just contributing even more to his disease and to his medical condition that he had. So he had to recover from alcoholism. On his last job, he fell off a ladder, and he couldn't work anymore after that. The last 3 years of his life, he was diagnosed with severe emphysema. The last 2 years of his life, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on oxygen. The last year of his life, confined to home. Went from the bed to the kitchen table, back to bed. From the bed to the bathroom, back to bed. That was his last year of his life. Folks, that's a tough life. But what's interesting is this. I heard my father complain very little about anything through which he ever went negatively in his life. Just didn't complain. He understood that life is going to deal you a hand, and guess what? You've got to play the cards that you have been dealt. Life is not always fair. Life is not always equal. Life is not going to be the same for every individual. Some are going to have it good. Some are going to have it bad. Some are going to have a mixture of both. My father understood that. When my father was diagnosed with emphysema, he did go through about a 6-month period of deep anger. He took that anger out on my mom, but he was really angry with himself. You see, it was time to retire. Mom and Dad loved to travel, and guess what? Every bit of that came to an end, and there was no traveling. Dad went nowhere after he was diagnosed with emphysema. Sad, isn't it? But most of the time, Dad didn't complain about his problems. Kind of reminds me of Job. Notice what he says, "Naked came I out of the womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Folks, we've got to have a proper attitude toward our struggles, toward our difficulties, toward whatever life throws our way. And we just have to have a mindset that I'm going to be faithful, dedicated to God, come what may, and I'm going to overcome regardless of what I have to face. Fortunately for me, I've had a wonderful life compared to the life that my father experienced. This next lesson is so big that I made this lesson its own point. There were many times that my dad said these words, "Do as I say, not as I do." What do you mean, Vic? Well, it's a big lesson I learned. You see, my dad was a smoker. He smoked 2 to 3 packs a day for almost the entirety of his life. My dad had 3 tattoos on his body. He got those in the Navy. 2 on one arm, 1 on the other, 1 he had to keep hidden. It was so bad. Don't even ask me what was on it. It's just bad. My dad always said, "Don't get a tattoo. Do as I say, not as I do." My dad drank beer and alcohol, trying to compensate for his manic depression. You know what he always told us? "Don't drink beer, don't drink any alcohol." Here's another one. My dad worked with his hands. He worked with his back doing the things that he did. And he always taught me and my brother, don't you dare work with your back. Don't work with your hands. You make certain you work with your mind. Do as I say, not as I do. For me, every one of those lessons stuck. I didn't smoke cigarettes, I think one, my entire life growing up as a teenager. I got zero tattoos. I drank a little bit in high school, not very much. Very little. It's nasty. It's gross. It's expensive. Takes your mind away. Who wants that mess? Not me. And guess what? I love that one. Don't work with your back and hands. Work with your mind. I got that in real good. I'm a preacher. You know what they say about preachers? But folks, here's something. That is not the best way to teach, is it? Not at all. The best way for a parent to teach is to teach by setting a positive example of how it ought to be done. Isn't that what Paul told the churches? He says this, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ Jesus." We shouldn't walk around as Christians looking at other individuals and saying, "Hey, you do as I say, not as I do." That's pretty Pharisaical. Because that's exactly what they did according to Matthew 23, 1 through 4. You and I need to be positive examples for others to follow, because you see, sometimes individuals will see a negative example and they'll say, "Well, why is he telling me not to do exactly what he is doing?" My dad taught me a lot of other lessons too, folks, that I don't have the time to talk about. How's this one? If you're going to do something, you do it right. And my dad did it right. I'll guarantee you. If you ever got my dad to do a job for you, you could bank on it that it was up to snuff. No doubt about that. Secondly, pay attention to the details. How about this one? Everything has a place. And that led to this one. You put everything back where you found it. My dad had a detached garage that was his office. He had all of his tools in there, all lined up on the wall, all the bolts, nuts, and everything in these little boxes everywhere. And if one tool were gone, he knew it. Hammer, screwdriver, wrench, bolt, it didn't matter what it was. You not put that thing up, he'd come in that afternoon, "Where's my hammer? What'd you do with my hammer? Who's got my hammer?" Ugh. Have to go out in the yard, find his hammer. Bring it back in. Guess what? Boy, put it where it goes. It's okay to take it. You put everything back where you found it. But here's one that I really think we all need to focus on. And young people, listen to me. All behavior has consequences. My dad grew up in a world wherein almost everybody smoked. My dad started smoking at about 8, 9, 10 years old. My grandparents would go somewhere. My great aunt would come over to babysit. She'd dip snuff, and my dad and his brother would smoke while she's gone. Can you imagine? You know, now we give them a tablet. Back then they gave them a cigarette. Aren't you glad we got tablets? I just told you. Folks, he smoked 2 or 3 packs a day. We're talking 40 to 60 cigarettes a day. Every day of his life. From the time he was 10 to the time he was in his mid-50s, he smoked that many cigarettes. He tried on more than one occasion to quit. But his body was addicted to nicotine physically and mentally. You know when he wanted one the worst? Right after he got through eating. He said, "Boy, a cigarette sure would taste good right now." Even when he was trying to stop. And he tried to stop probably 5 or 6 times and just could not. He contracted emphysema. because he smoked. I see people smoking, young people smoking. I just want to roll down my window and I just want to look at them and say, hey guys, don't smoke. One of these days, that will catch up with you. My dad died of emphysema, but he really died of a heart attack due to emphysema. He was in the home with a gentleman who was working in our house, and he fell over dead. Fortunately, that man was a firefighter who was working these part-time jobs. He went in and tried to revive my dad, but it couldn't be done. And it's all due to what? Smoking, folks. Behavior has what? Consequences. They mentioned the fact that my dad began to drink in order to compensate for his manic depression, became an alcoholic. He was in four treatment facilities. And it took a pretty bad car wreck for him to wake up and say, you know, I need to stop. Or one of these days, I'm going to kill somebody because I'm drinking. Behavior has consequences. Folks, how we are living right now matters. Doesn't it? It matters. Our behavior has right now and will have in the future, even in eternity, consequences that are attached to it. And Paul notes that in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10. Listen to what he says. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. There will be a consequence to our behavior. Either good behavior or bad behavior, there will be an eternal consequence that has to be faced. Question. Right now, are you ready to face the consequence of your life, of your behaviors, in judgment? That's the question, isn't it? The Bible tells us, if we're not, we need to get ready. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 2. Do you need to obey the gospel? Don't wait till tomorrow, do it now. The steps are simple. Hear the truth, believe in the Christ as the Son of God, repent of sins, confess the name of Jesus, and be immersed in water for the forgiveness of sins. It's not that hard, is it? We can do it right now if you're ready. If you're an erring child of God, do you need to repent of something in your life? Confess that sin, make it right with God. Folks, our behavior has consequences. My dad taught me that. Do you need to respond to the invitation? Won't you come as together we stand and sing?